Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
To be clear, the government's footprint in the housing market needs to be smaller than it is today.
And to suggest that the private market can come back in and take the place and do the same thing that they've done for the past 20 or 30 years is simply impractical. It won't work.
Two voices to begin today's show, HUD Secretary Sean Donovan first and investment executive Bill Gross. They were both at a housing market summit in Washington yesterday, convened by Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner. Gross also said America has been overhoused. How's that for a phrase? America has been overhoused, as Geithner was taking input on what to do about Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, which collapsed with a housing bubble under the weight of their federally guaranteed mortgage loans. The taxpayers are already shelling out $150 billion to deal with those bad debts. But the federal government today guarantees even more mortgages than before the crisis began, more than 90% of new loans in the last year. So is it time to rethink the role of the government in the housing market? That's what the conference with Geithner was for yesterday. Is it time to rethink what we mean by the American dream? Let's look at what Treasury Secretary Geithner is considering and the big questions underneath. Barbara Kiviat writes the Curious Capitalist blog for Time magazine. Her article yesterday is called The Bastardization of the American Dream. Hi, Barbara. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
And listeners, should we rethink the American dream as it relates to housing? And what should the role of government be in the housing market of tomorrow, now that Fannie and Freddie have collapsed? 212-433-WNYC. Give us a call, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer's show. Barbara, what is this bastardization of the American dream, as you refer to it?
Well, that was a post I did about the original meaning of the phrase American dream, which, you know, in sort of current parlance, is very tied up with this notion of home ownership. But when the phrase was originally used by a historian in 1931, it actually had nothing to do with buying a house. It was more about economic opportunity for all. You know, that's sort of a very interesting era in thinking about what to do with the system of mortgage finance going forward, because what we have in the U.S. today very much started in reaction to the housing crash in the Great Depression, including the creation of Fannie Mae. A lot of this was about economic stimulus, getting the construction industry going again. And over the decades, we just kept building onto this idea that government should be very tied in to home ownership. You know, no other country in the world has something like Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. So these questions that are being asked are really a long time in coming.
And I guess no other country has home ownership so bound up with the population's sense of self-identity, correct?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I don't know that I'm well-traveled enough to know the answer to that, but I do know that plenty of industrialized countries have home ownership rates that are much higher than the United States. Spain is a very good example. About 90% of people there own their own homes. In the UK, it's slightly higher than in the US. But there are also countries that have much lower rates of home ownership. Germany's in the 50, maybe 55% range, and Switzerland, only a third of families own their own homes. So this idea that home ownership is necessarily a very important part of, you know, sort of having a rich nation or a rich population, relatively speaking, is not necessarily true. Now the history of the United States is very different than, you know, Europe. Canada has about the same home ownership rate as we do. You know, owning property is very much tied into the history of the U.S., if you think westward expansion. So it's not necessarily saying that that rate should be higher or lower, mm-hmm. but it's just saying that there's not necessarily anything magic about having the home ownership rate at a particular point.
Well, when we say that the federal government now guarantees more than 90% of new mortgages, what does that mean, and how historical a blip is that?
So they're standing behind mortgages in one way or another. A small slice of that is FHA loans, which is sort of very explicit. But most of that, what you're really talking about is Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which originally it was just Fannie Mae, and that was a fully owned part of the government. Back in the 30s, the government wanted to create an organization like Fannie Mae, which basically what they do is they don't make loans, but they buy loans from banks and they package them up and then resell them so that banks then get money to lend more. And back in the 30s, the Roosevelt administration wanted the free market to create this sort of organization. They actually created a certain law so that private companies could come in and do this, and none did, which is why we created Fannie Mae. So, and that's sort of similar to what Freddie Mac does. So it's not necessarily that the government's writing the loans, but they're sort of involved in the process of buying them up.
And it was
which makes banks more likely to lend if they know that they can then turn around and sell the loan, to these agencies.
And so there's a lot of back and forth between the political left and the political right over whether Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac drove the housing bubble because they had this federal backing. So the Wall Street firms felt free to make all these mortgage securities and derivatives and stuff because they knew the taxpayers ultimately were backing them up. Or whether the federal government through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac guarantees were just securing home mortgages for people and Wall Street went wild all on its own. Do you have an opinion about that?
Say two things about that. First of all, before 2008, when the Bush administration took over Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, basically made them part of the government, these agencies were private companies. They had stocks that traded. They were not technically in any way backed by the federal government. It was completely implicit. They had been privatized many, many years ago. But everyone just kind of believed that in an emergency, the government would step in, which it did. So this is sort of one of the big problems with this idea of let's just privatize them. I mean, in a way, we tried that, which is, one of the reasons why Barney Frank is now sort of more adamantly saying, like, you can't kind of work with a structure. You kind of have to abolish them. So that's one thing that is important to think about. The other thing is that we will have at some point, in the history of the United States, another great real estate crash. There were about 70 years between the last one and this one. It'll happen again at some point. I don't know when. When it happens, private capital will completely leave the mortgage market because this is how these things go, and the government will step in. That's just going to happen. The government, housing is too important a sector of the economy. By one calculation, it accounts for about 17% of GDP for the government in an emergency not to step in. The question is, do you need these agencies operating continuously over time? In an emergency, arguably, the Federal Reserve could step in and backstop mortgage finance. And then you don't have, all these decades in between with maybe unnecessary government involvement. Because what you're talking about is very true, that the nature of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac was that they were private companies. There were investors. They were like any other private companies. They were competing for market share. They were incented to make as much profit as they could. Yet there was this sort of implicit government backing so that investors in these companies didn't have to scrutinize. They didn't really have to worry that much about whether or not what Fannie and Freddie were doing was smart. Although I'll let you jump back in a second. Just one other caveat to that we need to keep in mind. Any company that was involved in mortgage finance in the bubble had horrible losses. So many went completely out of business. So many mortgage lenders. So, one thing you need to keep in mind is when you talk about how much, the bailout of Fannie and Freddie is, you need to not just think about that versus no bailout. You need to look at, the amount of money that Bank of America or HSBC lost on their mortgage business, or you need to look at the dozens of subprime mortgage lenders that imploded and don't exist anymore.
So the underlying question at this Geithner conference yesterday was pretty much that. What role should the government play in the future in the housing market? And here are two competing views in a nutshell. First, from the conference, from the free market think tank, the American Enterprise Institute's Alex Pollack.
We need a private secondary market for the bulk of mortgage loans. We should have no GSEs. Fannie and Freddie should no longer be GSEs. You can either, in my view, be a private company or a government agency, one or the other, but not both.
GSE is referring to their government-backed status. He says there should be no such thing anymore as a GSE. And here on the other side is John Taylor, a guest on the PBS NewsHour last night from the National Community Reinvestment Coalition.
Look what happened when essentially Fannie, in fact, took a backseat in mortgage lending. From 2001 to 2003, they lost $1 trillion of market share, $1 trillion. They lost it to the free market, these folks that Bill was suggesting should be the only lender. And what did they do? What did that free market do? Well, those are the ones who financed no documentation, low documentation, piggyback loans, made loans to people who had no ability to pay. It was all about fee-taking. It's what got us into this mess. So the thing is not to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Bring them back, but have the oversight.
Have the oversight, but in a different way. So two very different views of the free market and the role of government and the housing market from John Taylor and Alex Pollack. My guest is Barbara Kiviat, who writes the Curious Capitalist blog for Time Magazine, Curious Capitalist. And we're being curious about the underlying issues at the housing market conference that Secretary Tim Geithner held yesterday. We will take your phone calls in just a minute. Your take on all of this, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or online at WNYC.org, post to Brian Lehrer Show and our page. But Barbara, let me get your take on those two opposite views. Certainly the National Community Reinvestment Coalition wants money coming into poor communities to help lower-income Americans be able to afford housing, including home ownership. Clearly, the American Enterprise Institute, as a conservative think tank, thinks the market can do everything. Is AEI just being free market ideologues here, and the Community Reinvestment Coalition is more realistic with a more nuanced view? Or is the Community Reinvestment Coalition just trying to get more taxpayer money for the taxpayers they represent?
Right. I would say the truth lies in the middle, which, it invariably does. It doesn't make for a good soundbite. But, the private market, there were a lot of private market securitizations. And, a lot of stuff was going on in terms of no-doc loans and, things like that. But at the same time, that's, except in a moment of crisis, probably part of what should exist in mortgage finance. Although I will also say that if you look around the world, many countries have government agencies that are involved in the support of mortgage finance. But they're full government agencies. There's not none of this implicit hybrid model. And even in the U.S., we have that. We have Ginnie Mae, which is a full federal agency. They don't do securitizations, but what they do is they basically insure them for a fee. It's very transparent. If you want this government, insurance, that's fine. Then you pay for it, and here's the fee table, and then away you go. Ginnie Mae's fine. Canada has an agency that does something very similar. So does Japan. So this sort of provides some of the stability. It encourages the writing of very traditional, 30-year fixed-rate loans, but without this, sort of confusing, is it private, is it not, who's making the money, is it, for lower mortgage rates, is it to enrich shareholders sort of model.
Let's take a phone call. Here is Mr. Cam in New Rochelle. Hello, Mr. Cam.
Good morning. Yes, the American dream has clearly become a nightmare here. This is a reactionary recycling of a reactionary idea from Margaret Thatcher, the ownership society. It gives people the idea they're middle class, when they're really working class and they can't afford a home. They need to do what Europeans do and the other countries do, and that's encourage people to have decent neighborhoods, but renters, renting high-quality, safe neighborhoods so people don't have to flee it. They don't worry about African-Americans moving into the neighborhood and running down the equity. They're willing to pay high gas prices because they can afford to heat an apartment, but they can't afford to heat the home, and they don't complain about property taxes. So this whole thing has really been, a reverse kind of influence.
You're talking about, when you refer to African-Americans, you're talking about white flight as a part of this?
I'm talking about people who are afraid that they're going to move into the neighborhood where they own a home. like Yonkers, and they fight for a whole generation to keep African Americans out, whereas if they were renters, they would be more tolerant of integration and the kind of American dream.
Now, your call is so interesting to me, Mr. Cam, because usually you call to support the European model, which you're doing in this case, but usually that involves more government involvement in things, more government involvement in health care, more government involvement in family care, education, things like that. You're saying in this case that you want less government subsidy for housing, even though you generally support more than the U.S. does for many other areas of life, right?
That's absolutely right. In this case, we distorted the market, and we've created all of these ill effects from raising people's hopes, this kind of phony middle class thing. These people are working class. They cannot afford to be middle class, and they need to recognize their own limitations, and so do we, as, and of course we have to regulate and help with social programs and so on. But this is a Bush idea. He's the one that said this is a great way to get people to become middle class. Mm-hmm. It's a Republican scam. They're using when it's convenient to be pro-government to get votes, kind of the pork barrel, spread the money around, and that's the way this thing is in fact working.
Mr. Cam, thank you for your call. And Barbara Kiviat, what an interesting notion. And I think that there was, you know, among many other things going on, this confluence between right and left on government subsidy for home mortgages, or at least government guarantees of home mortgages, which made them easier to get. On the right, as the caller says, there was the Bush idea of the ownership society, right? If more people own things, including their own home, own their own Social Security, you know, own their own private school education, then ultimately there would be less demand for government. That was a right-wing view.
Right.
On the left, we had the idea that the government should be helping poorer people, who he described as working-class people, step up to the middle-class American dream, which includes your own home.
Right. Except that in the original rendering, it didn't. It's a fascinating point. I mean, home ownership is... it's the perfect political message. I mean, this is why we've been hearing about it. If you go back, from Herbert Hoover, FDR, you know, Lyndon Johnson, Ronald Reagan, you know, there are just these amazing quotes. You know, Bill Clinton explicitly said, we want to create 8 million new homeowners. George Bush explicitly said, we want to create 5.5 million new homeowners. On, you know, across the political spectrum, this was such a powerful message because it could be the ownership society, it could be helping poor families achieve a financial foothold. I mean, it sort of serves so many purposes. But the thing is that we missed a big part of the story. And the discussion about Yonkers and owning and renting is very interesting and very important, because there's a lot of talk now about maybe we should have more renters, maybe home ownership shouldn't sort of be this ultimate goal. And if you actually want to go down that line of thought, very quickly you run into a very big problem, which is 89% of single-family detached houses are owned and 83% of apartments are rented. So if you're talking about ownership and renting, you're also talking about what sort of structure you're living in. And part of that, getting back to the Yonkers point, has to do with government, not federal government, but local government. There were some studies that came out of Harvard about land use regulations, which in many parts of the country, especially on the coast, are very, very restrictive. There was this one study of, you know, the Boston metro area, you know, all these municipalities within 50 miles. And, you know, a majority, you couldn't, you know, you either couldn't build multifamily housing, you either couldn't build apartments or townhouses, or you could only own less than 10% of the land. I mean, dozens of these municipalities actually said, you cannot build this sort of housing here. So when you're restricting the type of housing, you're also, you know, just because of the nature of the thing, restricting who can live there, renters or owners.
Barbara Kiviat writes the Curious Capitalist blog for Time magazine as we talk about the issues at Tim Geithner's Housing Market Summit yesterday and how much government should be involved in the future. Jim in Union City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Yeah, and the New Yorker, the financial columnist, James Surowiecki, wrote about the fact that home ownership impedes mobility, job mobility, that people stuck in these homes, so-called underwater, even if they have a job prospect elsewhere, can't go to it.
It's harder to move, and we've certainly seen the mobility stats go down in the last 2 years since the bubble burst. Ernesto in Tenafly, you're on WNYC. You're in some loud place, Ernesto, aren't you?
Sorry, Brian. Multitasking here. Listen, I heard the guest say that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were fully privatized, and I don't think that's entirely accurate because back in the 90s, Bill Clinton was able to essentially force Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae to start buying some lower quality mortgages. And I think that was all in the sense of, you know, let's enable lower income people to own their own home, which is all well and good, but it's part of what got us into the problem. And I hear Democrats saying the same thing now. I hear them saying that they don't want two classes of households, you know, higher income who can buy their homes and lower income who will be the rental class. So I'm not sure we've learned anything, but I'd love to hear your guest comments.
Thank you, Ernesto. Barbara?
Yeah, I think that's really key. I mean, the renting, being a renter, has a lot of stigma to it. And again, as I was sort of responding to the other caller's comments, because of the way we've sort of built our environment and these other laws exist, if you're going to rent, that determines, in many cases, where you can live. I'm working on a story, and I was speaking to someone who had moved to Hutchinson, Kansas City, 40,000 people. She's a surgeon. She was going on a one-year contract. She called up a real estate agent. She said, I want to rent. I want to find an apartment to rent for a year. And the agent said, you're going to want to buy a house. And she said, no, I don't. Like, I want, and as soon as she got there, she's like, oh, I understand now. Like, there aren't luxury rentals in Hutchinson, Kansas. I'm sure someone from Hutchinson, Kansas is going to say that that's not right. But you know, it's all fine and good to say we want to make sure, you know, everyone sort of has a certain dignity and that there aren't two classes of people. But there are different ways to go about doing that. And the way that we've, as the caller correctly pointed out, you know, with Clinton and Bush, everyone, is, well, let's turn them into homeowners. Well, there's this other solution, which is, why don't we make sure that, you know, there are decent rental options? You know, why does whether you send a check every month to a bank or a landlord need to make some sort of big difference in the quality mm-hmm. of housing in which you live? Well, it shouldn't, but it does.
We're just about out of time. This is such a huge topic with such implications, both for our sense of identity as individual Americans, as well as for the future finances of the country during and after this crisis. And we could take phone calls that are coming in all day long. Obviously, we'll talk about this topic a lot over time, as we have before. You can keep this going on our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, where a conversation has broken out. But to wrap this up between you and me, Barbara, in terms of what happened yesterday, Geithner convened this conference, but he admitted that he does not yet have a solution. He wasn't convening people to, you know, offer the Obama administration solution to this for how much of a role the government should play or how to reinvent Fannie or Freddie or just put them out of business as government-supported entities. So he says work in progress, but he's going to do something in the middle. He's going to come out he pretty much said he's going to come out somewhere between the American Enterprise Institute and the Community Reinvestment Group, without mentioning them by name. So when are we going to hear an Obama administration proposal?
So they're supposed to have a plan early next year. But, you know, I think that the in-the-middle approach is, I think that that's reflecting a political reality. I mean, at the end of the day, is that the right one? I don't know. But it's very easy to understand why that's appealing, because this is such an emotional issue. I mean, I'm actually surprised there wasn't a caller sort of talking more about how important owning a home is to so many families, because it is. It's a really, you know, good choice. Not all. That doesn't mean that what we were doing, you know, in the past decade, which was buying too much house, taking out mortgages that were too large, stripping home equity out is right. But the basic, the nucleus of the concept of, you know, owning a house, of passing that, you know, wealth down to your kids, I mean, that's key. And so it's difficult to say how it should be reinvented.
Meanwhile, at the big Stuyvesant Town development in Manhattan, they seem to be moving from a rental model suddenly to an ownership model, and we'll talk about that next. We thank Barbara Kiviat, who writes the Curious Capitalist blog for Time Magazine. Barbara, great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. That's Stuytown Story next.